From Erie to Martinsburg, Mexico to Gettysburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it is a new year, and with open seats for governor and U.S. senator, along with a pitched battle over redistricting, the year 2022 in Penns Woods will be dominated by politics. Our Capitol Watch crew is here with an overview. And if it stands, the new legislative redistricting plan will be a monument to partisan gerrymandering. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Taylor and our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Center Square reports Pennsylvania's highway system is among the worst in the nation. Our roads and bridges rank 39th out of the 50 states in Reason Foundation's annual highway report. The report examines the cost-effectiveness and condition of each state's highway system using 13 categories of analysis. The Keystone State received its lowest rankings for deficient bridges and urban congestion. Pennsylvania ranked just above Maryland, but behind Delaware, New York, and New Jersey for the worst in the nation rankings. If you want to drive on good roads, go to North Dakota. They had the best overall ranking in the country. With questions surrounding the legitimacy of the 2022 election still perking through the system, Governor Tom Wolf has named a new acting Secretary of the Commonwealth to serve during his last year in office. The Secretary of the Commonwealth is the state's top election official. Lee Chapman has become the fifth person to serve in that position during the Wolf administration. She served for about 2 years as policy director for the department. Elections did go more smoothly in 2021, but with Pennsylvania being home to what is likely to be one of the most hotly contested U.S. Senate races in the nation, all eyes will again be on our electoral system. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Politics will dominate the statewide agenda in 2022. For the first time since 1958, there are open seat races for both governor and U.S. senator, as well as a fight over the drawing of congressional and legislative district lines. And then there are many key issues awaiting action in the General Assembly. Our Capitol Watch crew is here to sort through all of this. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And in the studio, I have your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to see you.
So happy to be here in the new year. Thanks, David.
Outstanding. And my friend, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation, Pennsylvania's free market think tank. Steve, great to see you.
Thank you, David. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, you know, we've got a great, big, glorious year that is right there in front of us as we start the journey to what I think everybody recognizes is going to be a really consequential year in Pennsylvania politics and state government. And just thought we'd take the show today and sort of walk the listeners through what we think the really big events of 2022 are going to be. And right out of the gate, I got to tell you, I think that this whole process of redistricting both the Pennsylvania congressional map and the lines for state House and state Senate, that how that struggle plays out, of course, is going to be really consequential because, of course, that's the terrain upon which all these political fights will take place.
I hope people like politics because 2022 is going to be all about politics in Pennsylvania. You have a U.S. senatorial race, mm-hmm. primary and general election. You have a gubernatorial race, primary and general election. You have U.S. congressional races. You have Pennsylvania state House and state Senate races.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these are extremely consequential this year.
Right.
Everything hangs in the balance. And underlying all that, especially in particular, the legislative races and the U.S. congressional races, is the process of reapportionment or redistricting which takes place every 10 years. That's a constitutionally mandated process to make sure that each state is properly represented proportionally in Congress.
Yes.
And each electoral district within each state is roughly equal or very close to identical in terms of how many citizens live in that district. So right. One person, one vote. Valuable principles, and this is certainly something that our founders designed. It's a proper and necessary function of our democracy.
And it's based on the results of the decennial census.
Right, and it happens every 10 years. So we have new census numbers. That census was finished up, and the numbers are in, and now the districts have to be reapportioned. One little side note to that, Pennsylvania lost, because of our relative loss of population, we lost another of our congressional seats,
right.
Which has been a terrible trend that's gone on for decades. Every census, we've lost a seat or two. And that takes away our clout in Washington, D.C.
It does.
As a state. But that's happening. So we're losing a congressional district. But all the new districts have to be laid out and designed. There's a process that takes place in the legislature. The state General Assembly will vote on maps to set the new U.S. congressional districts. Those maps would have to be signed into law like any other bill by the governor. And if they're not, then all sorts of chaos will break loose.
Yes.
And so they're working on that.
Yes.
Meanwhile, there's a legislative reapportionment commission that was created under Pennsylvania's constitution back in 1967 that takes care of the legislative redistricting. That commission is doing its work. It laid out a preliminary map. It's going to be looking for comments on that map. And then it's supposed to meet again to adopt final maps, which are subject also to appeal to the courts. And that's the process. It's undergoing. It's in process now. And, you know, no one knows the final outcome, but
right.
But it's consequential in terms of what it does to the ability of folks who are running for office. First of all, where do they run?
Correct.
What does their district look like?
Yes.
And then, you know, how is that district made up? Is it Republican dominated, Democrat dominated, evenly split, laid out in a sensible fashion, or is it gerrymandered? All those questions are going to start to arise.
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, Steve, remind me how that reapportionment commission is appointed. I believe it's legislative appointments and then gubernatorial appointment too.
Yeah, the legislative reapportionment commission is set up. It's a 5-person commission. The 2 floor leaders from each chamber, the Senate majority leader and the House majority leader, and the Senate minority leader and the House minority leader. So you have 2 Democrats, 2 Republicans. Together, those 4 elect a 5th member.
I see.
They normally can't agree, and therefore the provision in the Constitution is that the Supreme Court then gets the 5th pick, which is what they do. They picked a 5th commissioner. It's Dr. Nordenberger from
the former chancellor of the University of Pittsburgh. And yes, that has all been going on. And yes, and Steve, just one more level of complexity, that you have the filing of petitions, that candidates are filing petitions to get enough signatures to qualify to appear on the ballot, and they're attempting to do this at a time when the districts are in flux.
Right, and you can't – if your signatures that you've gathered to get your name on the ballot to run for U.S. Congress or a state House or state Senate seat, if those signatures are not from people who live in the district – they're useless.
Yes.
They don't count toward the number you need to
get on
the ballot.
Determined after the fact. In 2022, Pennsylvania has open seats for both governor and United States Senate. And that has not happened. It certainly hasn't happened in my lifetime. It's a very rare occurrence. I regret that our good friend Senator Pat Toomey is choosing not to run for re-election. But he's served for 2 terms.
Governor Tom Wolf is term limited.
Correct.
So there's an open seat for state governor as well.
First of all, we'll talk about the U.S. Senate race. So you have – the field is in flux, that you have new entrants, that you have people who've been in the race for some time. On the Republican side, you have Montgomery County businessman Jeff Bartos. You have a Cumberland County businesswoman, former Ambassador Carla Sands. And you also have a Montgomery County former congressional candidate and commentator Kathy Barnett. They've been the ones in the field for a while. But then you had these late entrants, that you had celebrity doctor Mehmet Oz, friend of Oprah, running from Montgomery County. And then you have Dave McCormick, who is a businessman, veteran, native of Pennsylvania, coming back home from out of state to run. So this is sort of – it's a big field. And again, it'll be a mad dash to May to see which of those people is on the Republican side.
And as you said, David, it's of tremendous national interest. With the U.S. Senate split almost perfectly evenly, other than the vice president,
right.
The outcome of this race could mean – all the difference between a Republican majority or a Democratic majority in the U.S. Senate for President Biden. So the entire Biden agenda really rides on this. And so you will see national money pouring into Pennsylvania from everywhere, because this is – I mean, we keep using the word consequential, but truly, these are consequential elections.
Right. And that Pennsylvania being a swing state. And in fact, I think that other than Susan Collins of Maine, that that Senator Toomey is the only other Republican in the entire northeastern U.S. So the Democrats view this as one of their prime pickup targets, that their leading candidates would be, of course, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, who ran for Senate previously. That you have U.S. Representative Connor Lamb from Allegheny and Beaver County, and also Montgomery County Commissioner Val Arkush. Malcolm Kenyatta, state representative from Philadelphia, also running as a far-left kind of outsider.
And we didn't mention also, when I gave that overview of the different offices, I forgot to mention lieutenant governor. That's also separately. Well,
and yes, it's separately elected.
So there's also a race for lieutenant governor happening.
Right.
All eyes are on Pennsylvania. Get out the popcorn.
Yes, yes, yes. And what's strange in the governor's race, that on the Democrat side of the ticket, that there's only one candidate, that Attorney General Josh Shapiro stands alone, that he's been positioning himself for this for quite some time, and essentially that the whole Democrat establishment has fallen in line behind him. And certainly the field of potential Republican gubernatorial nominees it's pretty deep bench, you look at it.
I counted, and my most recent count was 15. So that's quite a few candidates. But I think that it's going to be a really interesting year, because we talked on our last show about executive overreach in the past year. And I think really people are going to give a lot more thought this year to who they put in that office. Because it is a very important office, and that was never more important than it was during the pandemic, as we saw from the shutdowns. And a lot of the policies that came out of Harrisburg were the result of the governor's decision. So I think a lot of people recognize that now and are going to put a lot of thought into who they vote into that office, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
We would like that. So it's going to be really exciting this year watching all of that. And like Steve said, with the money that's going to come into Pennsylvania, get ready, because there are going to be political ads, you know, all over the place.
They already are.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Already.
They've already started.
Right.
You can run, but you can't hide.
But the good news about that is I think people are really going to take it seriously this year.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me on the show, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. But again, I was just saying the depth of the GOP bench in the race for governor, I think that the Republicans believe that they have a good shot at taking the office this year, that it's expected to be a good year for Republicans, that the party out of power in the White House usually does very well in the first midterm election following that, and that in the race for governor, you know, I would say the most prominent candidates at this point would be, you have the state Senate president, Jake Corman, from Center County. You have former U.S. Representative Lou Barletta from Luzerne County. He was the GOP nominee for U.S. Senate in 2018. You have the former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District, Bill McSwain, and as was said, a long list of others, State Senator Scott Martin, and on down the line. But it's going to be interesting, because when Tom Wolf defeated Tom Corbett in 2016 or 2014, excuse me, that it was the first time since the adoption of the new Constitution that a governor was not successfully reelected. And so that 8-year cycle of, you know, Republicans to Democrats to Republicans to Democrats was broken. And so now, after 8 years of Governor Wolf, a Democrat, we'll see if that balance restores itself, or whether one party can hang on for three terms.
And certainly, you know, the Democrats they've got some serious headwinds that they're running into. When you have President Biden and his sort of fits and starts in trying to attempt his national social agenda, but he's managed to be able to spend a heck of a lot of money in doing that.
Yes.
And maybe not as much as he wanted, but he's spent just astronomical amounts of, I guess you'd call it borrowed or created money that the U.S. Treasury doesn't actually have.
But yeah, printed money.
Printing money to spend. And now we're seeing the consequences of that across the board with inflation.
Yes.
And, you know, we have not seen inflation like this since the early 1980s. as that 1970s and 80s inflation cycle mm-hmm. finally petered out.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know how to deal with this. Prices are rising rapidly across all sectors, whether it's gasoline, whether it's food, whether it's housing, you know, whatever it is, it's the prices are rising and they're going up quickly. People don't like that. Like that's not one of those like issues that Democrats like and Republicans don't. Nobody likes inflation. There's very few. I mean, there may be a few investors who hedge themselves to get in the right position to do well under inflation.
But ordinary folks, inflation is
not
a thief that steals from everyone.
Yeah, and so we've seen the consequences now. Like we've been warning, many of us had warned for years. You can't keep spending at this level federally without starting to trigger inflation. Now inflation's been triggered. It's unleashed. It's hard to put it back in its box.
Correct.
And that is really, I think, going to be the defining issue in terms of these Republican versus Democrat contests that unfold in 2022. And boy, do the Democrats have some heavy, difficult headwinds to run into with the consequences of the irresponsible fiscal agenda now yeah. just reverberating through the economy.
And it's more than just, of course, the spending, the massive, massive federal overspending, printing money is what has triggered this. But something that's made it worse and will make it harder to rein in is the catastrophic energy policies of the Biden administration. That the first thing they did when they came into office, they yanked the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, that they rescinded leases for petroleum in Alaska, they ended leasing of energy extraction on federal lands, on and on and on. And so high energy prices drive inflation because energy is required at every step of the productive processes. I mean, especially in manufacturing, of course. But Rebecca, I mean, you can speak to this. When you have rising energy prices affecting our transportation, every single thing that we purchase in a store came on a truck.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the supply chain crisis is part – I mean, back to what we were just talking about, the massive spending. There's a workforce crisis too, in part because of the pandemic, in part because people haven't needed to work in some cases because of government government policies and government spending. So
right.
there's a workforce crisis as well, in addition to the energy prices, which is driving a lot of crisis in the supply chain because there aren't folks to work. There aren't truck drivers. We have an 80,000 driver gap right now across the country. So like you said, everything that gets delivered is delivered somewhere on a truck. And as you talk about those supply chain aspects of it, every part of the production process of every good that comes through our country, from raw material all the way up through manufactured good into retail
right.
stores
right.
is on a truck.
Correct.
So when the prices of that transportation increase because of workforce issues or because of fuel prices, it's going to increase at every step along the way
exactly.
in that supply chain. So that just exacerbates the inflation just astronomically because it just feeds on itself.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because there are policies that could help allay that crisis, but they're not policies that this administration at the federal level wants to do.
And I think that really is one of the looming questions of 2022. You know, will the radical Greens relent, or will they be forced to relent in the face of a public unrest and potential electoral disaster for Democrats, or are those, anti-energy, keep it in the ground people so powerful inside Democrat politics that that they just go over the cliff with it? I don't know. But I mean, when you can baffle gab a lot, you can try to spin stuff, but you can't spin the prices that people are paying at the pump, paying at the stores, the money that you have at the kitchen table when you're writing monthly checks. You can't fool people. They know when mm-hmm. their purchasing power is being diminished. They feel when they're falling behind.
Absolutely. And the Biden administration, their reaction, they know it's a problem. They realize it's a problem. And their reaction to it, well, we're just going to release some fuel from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That's a drop in the bucket.
Correct.
It doesn't change the price.
Like 30, what is it, 36 hours worth of fuel?
It's a drop in the bucket. I mean, literally a drop. So it's just, they're not taking it seriously. The solutions that it would take to change it are not on the agenda in Washington.
And there's always that geopolitical piece to this where, you know, Pennsylvania in particular, we're an energy producing state. We're an energy exporting state.
Yes, sir.
And that capacity has been doing nothing for the last several decades but grow. It means a lot to know that we can get our natural gas energy out of the ground in our home state. We don't have to send soldiers to some Middle Eastern country or someplace to fight in a conflict to get that energy. It means a lot when we can manufacture our own fuel supply from the natural gas that's in Pennsylvania to use in transportation and automobiles. It means a lot when we can create our own plastics and other manufacturing building blocks right here in Pennsylvania. That not only means geopolitical security. We don't have to be beholden to Vladimir Putin in Russia or any other world leaders who don't like us.
Yeah.
But it's good manufacturing jobs for our people.
Yes, sir.
Our people become relatively more wealthy and more prosperous. And that's the state we want.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Energy independent, a world at peace, and people working in prosperous industries right here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And again, the potential for that is real.
Here.
We
it's
have
right
the means
sitting,
of doing
it's sitting
it.
There.
And
yeah.
it's, we just need and leaders who will commit to it.
And it's environmentally clean relative to all other sources of energy and manufacturing.
Yeah, absolutely. So these are the things that are at stake in the public debate and the electoral outcomes of 2022. And again, we're grateful to you, the listeners, for being with us. And hopefully you'll continue to join us through the year ahead so that we can discuss these things together. Well, that's all the time that we have. Steve Bloom, where can people go to learn more about you and your work?
TheCommonwealthFoundation.org.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization, the things you're doing?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. As ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. From our team here, Rebecca and Steve and me, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Gerrymandering is almost as old as the Republic itself. The term originated back in 1812 when the Boston Gazette ran a political cartoon of a congressional district bearing a striking resemblance to a salamander that Governor Elbridge Gerry drew to the benefit of his party. Thus did the term enter the political lexicon. The word and the practice continue to this day. Congressional and state legislative district lines are redrawn every 10 years following the decennial census, which occurs in years ending in zero. Nationally, congressional districts are reapportioned, taking into account population growth and shifts among the states. Then individual states must redistrict to accommodate those changes. Here in Penn's Woods, the left has been working diligently for years to tilt the redistricting playing field in favor of Democrats. Congressional redistricting takes the form of a bill, which must pass both houses of the state legislature and then be signed into law by the governor. Left-wing groups poured millions of dollars into legislative races in 2020 in a failed effort to win Democratic majorities in the General Assembly. As a result of that failure, and for the first time in decades, there is a power split with Republicans in control of the legislative process and a Democrat in the governor's chair. Groups purporting to want so-called fair districts have agitated for months, claiming to want districts drawn without regard to political tilt. Potential congressional district maps released to date fail to meet that standard. Pennsylvania will lose one congressional district as our population has grown at a slower pace than most other states. Southwestern Pennsylvania lost population while other parts of the state, particularly the mid-state, have grown. Two incumbents in the Pittsburgh area are not seeking re-election, creating an obvious place for consolidation. That appears unlikely to happen, as preliminary maps instead put incumbent Republican Congressman John Joyce and Fred Keller into a combined district. Time will tell whether that becomes the final plan. This, however, pales in comparison to the blatant gerrymander of state legislative districts. The process of redrawing the legislative district map differs from congressional redistricting in that it is accomplished via a redistricting commission composed of the Republican and Democratic leaders of the House and Senate and a supposedly neutral fifth member appointed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court, however, is anything but neutral or impartial. Activist justices implemented new congressional district maps in 2015 by judicial fiat, installing a plan drawn by a California college professor that clearly advantaged Democrats. And it came to pass that Mark Nordenberg, Chancellor Emeritus of the University of Pittsburgh Law School, was named the fifth member of the commission. Like the Supreme Court, he has been anything but impartial, joining with the two Democrat members of the commission to draft a House legislative district map that would make Elbridge Gerry proud. The map violates virtually every principle of fair map making. It splits Pennsylvania's mid-sized cities, which are predominantly Democrat, combining them with Republican-leaning suburbs to create new majority Democrat districts. The city of Scranton has been sliced into four districts, the city of Harrisburg among three. For the first time in history, Lancaster is split in two, and the list continues. Natural features such as rivers and mountains have been ignored in the new map, and most notably, Republican incumbents have 12 times been combined together in the same district. Interestingly, about the same number of seats Democrats need to win back the House majority. Democrats have acknowledged the new state House map was drawn specifically to increase their numbers by creating new minority-heavy urban-suburban districts. Whether for partisan or identity purposes, a gerrymander is a gerrymander. And what are those left-wing voices who have been crying out for months for a fair process? Crickets. In the end, the maps can be appealed through the court system, but the case will ultimately end up before the same state Supreme Court, which appointed Mark Nordenberg to do its bidding. Checkmate. The public still has a few weeks to weigh in on the process, but the likelihood is that the maps will stand, largely as proposed, a monument to the enduring practice of the gerrymander. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WKMC-AM and WBRX-FM in Altoona, along with WXTU-FM in Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.